Good afternoon. Come on, let me hear you. We're in California. This is a place that everything happens. So can you say, I can do it? Come on, let me hear you again. I can do it. Are you having a good time? I love coming to this place. You know, this state is, I live in Texas, and we don't get this weather, by the way. This is so beautiful. But every time I come to I Can Do It, I want you to know that for all of us speakers that are here, it's just as empowering as it is for you. You know, just getting to hear some of the other presenters that are sharing their hearts and their experiences and their skills with all of us, because all of us are in the same journey. Would you agree? I mean, there is no one in this room that is not going through some kind of challenge. At the same time, they're going through some kind of highlight in their lives, because life is like that. And for these 2 hours, really, my objective is just to have a conversation with you and maybe take you on a little bit of a journey that I've been on for the last 25 years to try to understand this concept of self-healing. You know, right now we have so many questions, so many doubts about how do we heal. We have healthcare systems that are really struggling economically because we're focusing on the way we healed in the past, but not really paying attention to what the new science and the new data is showing today of what really helps people heal. And this presentation is all about that. It's about sharing with you perhaps some stories that will inspire you to understand that all of us are capable of healing. All of us are capable of healing. At the same time, what is the latest research saying about what really heals today? Because there's so much data out there that maybe most of us are not aware of, and then we become doubtful a little bit, and then, of course, the majority of the people are wanting to go a very traditional way because that's all they know. And then even though our intuition and our innate intelligence inside of our bodies are telling us something different, we doubt it. And that doubt, unfortunately, does not allow us to heal. It's one of the biggest killers of healing. And we're going to go a little bit over that. So this book is an interesting book because, for me, it's been a 25-year journey. And it actually started as I was in high school, and I had a vivid dream that I wanted to be a doctor. And the reason I wanted to be a doctor is because I wanted to make people feel good. I had a pediatrician that was very inspiring to me. Every time I would go in there, I would just feel better, just being in the reception area. And I would tell my mom always, like, I really like this doctor. And then she started catching me that I would start faking being sick, even though I was actually getting dressed and putting my nicest clothes. And my mom said, well, if you're not feeling well, why are you getting so dressed up to see the doctor? And it was just because I wanted to go be around that environment. And I realized that there's so much more to healing than just what we do for a patient. It's the environment that we create around us that actually is very healing. And he was doing that, whether he did it knowingly or unknowingly, that's what I felt as a patient. And that journey took me then into pre-med, and I came to the University of Dallas. That's why I moved to Dallas. I was living in Miami before, and I wanted to go to this school because they had a lady that was a PhD that ran the program. And when you finished her program, you were accepted at 98% of the schools that you wanted to. It was that good. And I just wanted to be around her because I had heard so much about her. And she was a very good mentor to me because even though she was a PhD, her passion was biology and how the body functions. And she would share with me all these stories about how the body functions. And I started recognizing that there is so much more to this shell that we see on the outside. And even if we know a little bit about what the heart looks like or what the lungs look like, many of us are really not aware of how miraculous their function really is every single moment. All the things that the body does automatically without us thinking about it. And then I started really getting involved with the nervous system. And I started learning that the nervous system was the master system. It controlled and regulated all the other systems. And I was really excited about that. I was like, well, I want to work with the strongest system in the body. I want to work with the system that's controlling the heart and is controlling the kidneys and is controlling the skin and is controlling the muscles and is controlling the bones. So I thought to myself, and I was as I was talking to her, she said, well, why don't you become a neurosurgeon? And I said, perfect, that's what I'm going to do. So she set it up for me to do a volunteer work in the neurosurgery department in our biggest public hospital in Dallas. And I did that for a year. So I got to really observe the benefits and the value of traditional medicine, especially when it comes to those type of critical cases. But at the same time that I was learning all of that, I was recognizing that most of our health problems are not critical. Would you agree? Most of our health problems are not the emergency or the urgencies of an accident or a fall or some kind of disease that spreads very quickly, like a very severe infection. Most of our health problems are actually preventable. Did you know that over 80% of our health problems are preventable? And the number one cause of those health problems, guess what it is? Lifestyle choices. The choices that we make every single day. And I'm going to share with you today some choices that perhaps will lead you to a better outcome. But the important thing today is to really try to understand, how do you fit in this journey? Where are you in this journey? And is there something right now that I can share with you that would allow you to have more energy, be able to sleep better, be able to have a better relationship with your loved ones, be able to have a greater sense of clarity as to what your passion is for life, be able to have more peace into your life? You know, I realized that in life, there's three planes. And this is one of the biggest lessons in this book, and that is that most of us view health on a physical plane. That means that I ache, my muscle aches, or I have a cut right here, or I have a symptom or a tumor right there, or I have an infection and I have inflammation right here. But the reality of it is that our bodies are made up of more than just the physical body. It's made up of an emotional body and a spiritual body. Would you agree? And I know we come and I can't do it, and you have these incredible people that are sharing with you all these amazing things to help you understand those things. But the reality, most of us, when we think about our health, we think about the physical plane. And the physical plane is important, but I can tell you it's not the most important thing in self-healing. It is the least important. Spiritual always rules emotional. Emotional always rules physical. If you can just get that, you will always understand that just because you're not finding a physical solution to your physical problem, you can't find it on an emotional plane. And you can then find an emotional solution to your physical problem. And then if that emotional solution doesn't seem to be there, you can rise above it and go into a spiritual realm and find a spiritual solution to your physical problem. Now I'm starting to sound like Deepak Chopra, right? But that's really the way that it works. And it's really an evolution that you have to understand and take yourself on this journey instead of feeling so frustrated and out of hope. Would you agree that most of us are just losing hope every day more and more? I mean, we see a society that is struggling. We see an economic crisis that we don't understand. And there may or may not be hope in the future to see that. But do you realize that all of those things that are happening externally outside of you will not impact you the same way if you just change your response towards them? If you just change your response towards them, and instead of looking at the economy as a negative thing, you can look at it as an opportunity to be able to create abundance in your life. Do you realize that the greatest wealth in the world has always been during the biggest economic recessions? The greatest wealth in the world has always been built during the biggest economic recessions. Why is that? Because when the majority of the people are struggling, then you have those few individuals and those rare individuals or those extraordinary individuals that think out of the box. And instead of getting caught up and saying, oh my goodness, I'm a victim of these circumstances, they start thinking about solutions, not only for themselves, but solutions for those individuals that are also struggling just like them. And then they come up with products and services to be able to offer those individuals. And that's what becomes the success that it has. I mean, I know we all have seen that during this economic recession, Apple has had a tremendous victory and success as far as the business world. And the interesting mindset of Apple is the fact that they had a very simple idea. They always looked out to making computers be very simple. And then they took that concept beyond into mobile, which means your iPads and your iPhones. And I'm still shocked because I travel quite a bit, and I'm on the plane, and you know, most people are texting or emailing right before the plane takes off. And I started looking, and I started recognizing that over 50 to 60% of those are Apple products. And even though they change them all the time, it's the only company that every time they come up with a new version, it doubles the sales of the previous version. And you start thinking about, why does that happen? Because they're not thinking the same way as the other companies are. Now, I want you to translate that into your health during this session, because that's really where it's going to have all the impact in the world. So I want to tell you a funny story about one of my patients, Mr. Jones. And Mr. Jones was a 75-year-old. He came to my office about a month ago, and he's a widower, but he looked like he was not feeling very well. He hadn't shaven in a few days. He looked like he was wearing his pajamas, and he was walking around in my office and saying, I just need an adjustment. So I evaluated him, and I adjusted him, and then I had a busy day, so I didn't pay much attention to it. Then 2 weeks later, I'm having dinner with my wife, and Mr. Jones walks in into this restaurant, all dressed up to the T, all shaven with gel in his hair, with a beautiful 20-year-old next to him. And I'm like, is that Mr. Jones? So he saw me, and he comes over to my table and says, Dr. Mancini, so great to see you. I was going to call you and tell you, thank you so much for what you told me. And I said, Mr. Jones, what happened to you? I said, well, Dr. Mancini, don't you realize what you said to me has changed my life? And I said, Mr. Jones, what did I say to you? And he said, well, Dr. Mancini, you told me get a hot mama and be cheerful. I said, Mr. Jones, that's not what I said. I said, you have a heart murmur, so be careful. And the interesting story about that is the fact of this. During this session, I'm going to say a few things that you're probably going to want to write down. But the most important thing that I want you to write down for yourselves is really what your inner voice, your inner wisdom tells you when I'm saying something. Another lesson that I learned as I'm taking a lot of classes is primarily not necessarily to write what the speaker says, but write down what you're going to do about it. Because the last thing I want is for you guys to go home and have all these notes and have all this wonderful information and then not end up doing anything about it. Because the reason why this theme is I can do it is because doing is what allows us to get the results that we're looking for. You can think it all you want to, but until you do it, it's never going to really manifest to the degree that you want to. So I want you to be thinking about what are the action steps that I can take right now that can allow me to implement this information, this awareness that I'm getting during this weekend. And when you do that, then it makes all the difference in the world, because then all of a sudden, now you realize that you have control. You have the power to make a difference. You have the power to choose, I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it. If you're not going to do it, then that's a choice. But then stop complaining to everybody else why things are not changing in your life. But if you're going to do it, then you'll see that little by little, things will begin to change because you took an action step. So what action steps have happened in my life that have led me through this journey? The first memory that I can recall that was a transformational moment in my life was when I was 16 years old. And you probably picked up by my accent right now. I'm originally from Colombia, South America. But the reason I have an Italian name is because my father is Italian. So, and I lived in Italy for a while. So I have a Colombian accent with an Italian suit. And when I was 16 years old, my parents and us, so I'm fourth out of five boys, they had decided to move from Colombia to the United States. And the reason for that is because they wanted all of us five boys to have more opportunities for us in life. See, my father made a decision that was not up to him. My father grew up wanting to be a professional soccer player. He was actually quite good. And he could have gone into a professional, but his father owned a business. And in the Italian tradition, your son, especially your oldest, takes over the business as your father gets older. Well, my father was sent to business schools, etc., but he was miserable. And he always wanted to be a soccer player. So as we got older, my father would always encourage us, choose what you love in life. Don't choose something just because it's going to pay the bills. Choose what you love, what you're passionate about. Because when you do that, it doesn't seem like work anymore. It seems like your purpose. It seems like you were what you were born to be. So when I was 16 years old, as a Christmas present, my mom and dad told my brother Aldo and I, he's 2 years older than me, I have a surprise for you guys. I know you've been wanting to see your friends in Colombia, so we bought you 2 tickets to go visit your friends for New Year's. So after Christmas, my brother and I were so excited. We get to Colombia, and instead of staying in our house because my family was not there, we stayed with my aunt that had a beautiful house, and she had two son and a daughter that were little, 7 and 9 years old. And during that stay, we had a big party when we got there, and all of our friends came over. They even had like mariachi bands and all that. It was really fun. And then we went to bed. And around 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm sleeping in one of the guest bedrooms. My brother Aldo sleeping in another guest bedroom. My uncle had to go to a business trip after the party, so he took off. And my aunt was sleeping in her bed, and the two kids were sleeping in their bed. And I wake up with the end of a gun hitting me in the back of, in the head, right here in the back of my head, hitting me really hard. And a man saying to me, "Where is the safe?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about? Where is the safe?" Hit me again. So then they took my hands and they put it behind me and tied them up. They took my feet, tied them up, and then tied them both together. And they were hitting me in the head. Then they took my sock because I was crying so much, and they put the sock in my mouth, and they would only take it out whenever I was going to tell them where the safe was. I have no idea if there's a safe in this house or not. It was a brand new house that they had built a year before, and they thought that we lived there or whatever. So then after a few moments of that, they said, "Well, we're going to kill your brother if you don't tell us where the safe is." So they went to the room next door. And then I could hear my brother yelling and screaming. And then they came back a few moments later with their hands full of blood, saying, "We killed your brother. You better tell us where the safe is." I had no idea what they were talking about. At this time, I'm just like praying and saying, "Please, I don't know. This is the end for me." I knew they were going to kill me. Well, for some reason, a gentleman next door, they had a security guard next door. They noticed the commotion, and they saw a car parked up front that didn't belong there, and they called the police. So the police came, and the people fled, and they caught him later. So my brother was okay, but he had 20-something stitches. He had to be rushed to the hospital. And the lesson for me at that time was that I was given a second chance. I was given a second chance not to take my life for granted anymore. Even though I was 16 years old, I realized that all of us are living on borrowed time. Every single moment in our lives makes all the difference in the world because the power is in the now, not in the past and not in the future. And at that moment in my life is when I decided that I was not going to waste my life, that I was going to make something of myself. And that's when my dream of becoming a doctor came through. I was always an athlete, and I was just very involved in my school and always doing a lot of volunteer work, etc. I wanted my life to have meaning. And if you haven't had that experience, I hope you don't have to experience something that bad in order for you to wake up and recognize that this is your life. You get to write this life any way you want to. You get to create every single day the way you want to create the future. And after that experience, I recognized that I had to choose how I was going to live my life. And from that moment on, I want you to know that I have moved into a present time frame of mind that I have never, it has never left me. And sometimes people say to me, well, you've done this and you've done that. How did you done this at such a young age and all that? And I've always said the same thing. You don't have to be old or you don't have to be a certain age to accomplish something great in life. All of us have this greatness inside of us that is just waiting to come out. But we, unfortunately, suppress it down because it's not what the norm is for out there. And because most of us do not want to stand out in the crowd, we just go with the flow. You know that advertisers have figured out something? That if they put enough advertisement out there and enough percentage of the population feel that something is trendy, then it becomes a trend. And it's just a very simple formula of how many commercials they're going to have and how much money they're going to invest and what's the possible return on that investment. Well, the same thing happens to us. We tend to get ourselves caught up into this idea that whatever our friends and our family and their thought processes and their behaviors, we tend to adapt them, never really reflecting, is this something that I really believe in? Is this something how I choose to live my life? How many of you saw the movie Walk the Line, the story of Johnny Cash? Remember that what the breakthrough point in Johnny Cash's life was the fact that he was a musician. And he was always playing other people's songs. And he was a very good musician. But then one day he got a lucky break in which a producer said that he would listen to him. And he said, play me a song. And he started playing somebody else's song. And he said, well, that's a great song. But he says, I want you to play me a song that you will play if it was the last song that you will ever play in life. Imagine that. If this is the last song you will ever play, play that song for me. And he played one of his original songs. And the producer liked it so much that he got recorded. It became an instant success. And then, of course, his life just took off from there. So my question to you is, you know, Wayne Dyer says, live our lives like if our son's still playing inside of us. Are you playing with that son inside of you? Are you selecting that song? Are you living your life the way you truly believe you want to live it? Because if you're not, then take this weekend to really make that a priority. To walk out of this weekend, not only energized and inspired to no end, with all these amazing tools, all these incredible books that are going to change and transform you in every possible way, and then do something about it. Make a commitment to yourself. Get somebody next to you. In fact, turn to the person next to your right and tell that person, I'm ready to make a change. Go ahead. Say it louder. Now turn to the person to your left and say, I'm ready to make a change. Because the reality of it is that person in front of you or next to you could actually be an accountability partner. I believe in accountability partners. There's been many times in my life in which I've aspired to do something that was really outside of my comfort zone, and I knew that I needed somebody to hold me accountable. Somebody that was there that would just gently remind me, hey, have you done this? You told me 2 weeks ago you were going to do that. Have you done it yet? So let me share with you the reason I wrote this book. About 10 years ago, I lost my father. And the story of my dad, as you know, he wasn't very happy because he didn't get to choose the life he wanted to. And as a young man, my dad started drinking at 13 years old, started smoking at 14 years old. And during that early stage, he got married at 18. My mom was 17 and started having all these children. His father passed away at 55 because of a heart attack. So he started running the big company, which caused a lot of stressing him even more. And during that time, my dad never worked out. My dad just became pretty much somebody that was very complacent. Was always a great father, was always a great nurturer, was always a good husband, but there was no life in there. I remember as we were doing sports, we would invite my dad to come out and play soccer with us. We all were soccer players, and he wouldn't come out, even though that was his passion, because he let go of that dream. And then my father had a surgery that was unnecessary, that actually, unfortunately, he had to have multiple surgeries to fix that initial surgery. And then he was in intensive care, and then he was in a hospital for months. And after he got out of the hospital, the doctor tells him that you have lung cancer, stage 4, and you only have 2 months to live. And my dad lived about a year later. He passed on. I could not save him. With all the knowledge and all the people that I know in my world, I could not save him. And as I've gone through this evolution and this journey about self-healing, the reason I wanted to put this message out there is because I realized that the number one thing that is missing out there is the fact that people don't believe that their bodies can heal themselves. That we have been conditioned to believe that healing comes from outside in rather than inside out. That unless we take something for this symptom or that symptom, that our bodies are not going to get well. And this book is really a way that I can hopefully inspire you to recognize that there are people healing every single day. And there's so many inspiring stories of people. That, you know, what I did is that because I know so many doctors, and all type of doctors, MDs, DOs, chiropractors, naturopaths, acupuncturists, I had to send them an email and said, would you please connect me with those patients that heal naturally from something you never thought would be possible? And I started getting these stories that were so miraculous. But that's the thing, is that the body is miraculous. The body can actually heal if you allow it to heal. If you remove that interference, whether it's your thoughts, your behavior, or whether it's your spiritual connectivity, where you don't even believe that the body can heal itself. Whatever the reasons are, that's what I wanted to share. And I wanted to share it because, you see, what hurts me about my dad more than ever, anything, is the fact that I don't have him in my life for the last 10 years. I can't go to him like I used to and get advice and get that nurturing that he always gave me. Then I have 2 children that are growing up without a grandfather. And they ask me about him and say, Dad, how come we don't have a grandfather? And it's all because of lifestyle choices that my dad took early on in his life, in which he thought he was going to live forever. Well, guess what? Those statistics are getting worse and worse every single year. Every single year, we're getting unhealthier because of that lifestyle choices. So then, this is the dilemma that we're facing right now. We live in a healthcare system, and the problem as I see it is that we are conditioned to think that we have a healthcare system, but in reality, we have a sick care system. Would you agree? Yes. We don't go to the doctor unless we're sick. We've been conditioned to be sick. The thing that I want you to understand is that our bodies are designed to be well. And it's no one's problem. It's not intentional, because I have a lot of my friends that are medical doctors, and I can tell you, they wake up every single day knowing and thinking that they're doing the best they can for those patients. And they've sacrificed years after years of long hours of schooling and sacrificing many things to get to a point that they can serve others. So where does it come from? You know, Hippocrates, which is the father of medicine, 500 BC, he was actually an individual that was very traditional in his early years. But then as he got older, he became very, what we call, vitalistic. He began to recognize that there was more to healing than just trying to find and break down the part in order to understand what's going on, which is the way that we've adapted for many years. So that's why, with the invention of microscopes and other technologies, we take an organ and we break it down and we study the cells and we try to figure out how can we do something to try to make that organ function better. What we don't take into consideration is that that organ is connected to other organs, and this body works as a whole. It doesn't work as a part. And whenever you have an organ that's suffering, it has an impact in another system immediately. And then that system has an impact on another system, and that's what creates this amazing challenge that we're facing right now whenever we have problems, health problems. So what can we do about this? What can we do about this is it's very simple. We have to learn to understand, where did this belief system come from for us? I remember that my mother used to take us to get our booster shots so we don't get sick during the winter season. And we got sick every single winter season. And as I've learned more about natural healing, I started realizing that the philosophy of injecting a virus or a bacteria in my system in order for my body to build immunity to it, so that way when I'm exposed to that again, my body has the ability to fight it, doesn't make any sense. Why would I want to introduce a foreign body to my system, to my body, when I already know the body is designed to build antibodies for things that are coming in? But why would I be the one doing that? That is the part that didn't make sense to me. And it's similar to some of the vaccinations that we're having right now, because it's a concept that is very unique. It's not making a lot of sense in the way that the science is dictating what makes us healthy and what makes us sick. So you need to reflect upon, how is it that you're believing and understanding the body's ability to heal? Are you living in a model of sick care in which you may or may not have health insurance? How many of you have health insurance? Raise your hand. Okay. As you know, that one of the biggest challenges in the healthcare debate right now, and I've been part of many of those discussions, is that we're actually adding millions of lives into a healthcare system that is broken. And I don't pretend to be an astrologer, but if I had a prediction, I can tell you it's going to get worse before it gets better. In Texas, I serve on the advisory committee for the governor regarding the health of our state. And as you know, Texas has three of the worst 10 cities in the United States as far as being unhealthy, most of it because of the nutrition and eating a lot of the Southern Comfort fried foods that we have. And also the big Texas size plates don't help. I mean, they're humongous. It's like four people can eat in one of those plates. But this is something that I've been really observing, and it's really a dilemma, because until you move into a healthcare mindset, you're always going to be sick. You need to be thinking health before you think sickness. By the time you think sickness and you're already sick, it's already too late. The reason that 80% of the conditions that we're facing today are primarily preventable, it's because we're not doing the right behaviors that will allow us to be healthy and not develop those diseases in our bodies. And as you go through this process, I want you to really start paying attention as to how you live your life. Do you have a medicine? You know, remember that the old bathrooms, we used to all have a medicine cabinet, and we used to put medicine in there? Is that really necessary? Is it necessary for you to already predict that you're going to get sick, or does it make more sense for you to already believe that you're going to be a healthy human being because your body was designed to be healthy and you're going to get to live to 120 years old, which is the latest science tells us that all of our bodies are designed to live to 120. I'm already writing my 100-year birthday speech. I did an exercise called the Passion Test, and I believe that that's something that all of us should do. You need to predict and project where it is that you want to go. And the choices you're making today is actually what will allow you to get there. So when it comes to your health, some of the behaviors that we're going to be talking about is going to be primarily based on that. But here are some of the facts that I want you to, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but the reality of it is that the United States spends more money on healthcare than any other country in the world, by far. And we still rank number 37th in the world. The reality of it is over $6,000 per member of the family is being spent on healthcare. And Harvard University actually just did a research 2 years ago that showed that over 50% of the personal bankruptcies in the United States are due to healthcare problems. That's you. So look at the person next to you, to your right, and say, you know you're going to be broke in the next year or bankrupt. Because that's really the statistic. Every other person here will be bankrupt because of a health problem. Do we have to wait until it gets so bad in order to do something about it? What is the answer? I don't believe so. I really believe that all of us really want to be healthy. All of us want to make the right choices. And I know I'm speaking to the choir because you guys are here in this incredible weekend. And the rest of society that chose perhaps that this was not where they wanted to spend their weekend. So that know that you're already in a path that is a lot better path than most people out there in the world. So give yourself a round of applause because I want to congratulate you for that. Because you're here this weekend doing something about it. But this is really something that is alarming to me, especially the first one. So the latest statistics just came out that says that for the first time, we have a generation that our children will not outlive their parents because of the obesity problems and the associated diseases that come from that, such as high blood pressure, diabetes, etc. So how many of you have children? Please raise your hand. I want you to just take a moment, okay? Just think of for a minute of the idea of having to bury your child. You see, I lost my older brother. I went through that. I saw my mom and dad bury my brother, my older brother, and it killed them. It was just, they still haven't recovered. My mom still hasn't recovered. And the interesting thing is that this statistic is solely based on behaviors in the household as to what we're feeding our children. The lack of exercise to our children. Very basic things that we can do something about it. And if you're not feeling a sense of urgency, I hope that you will after this session, because this is urgent. And the time is now to do something about it, because if we wait too long, it's not going to happen. Albert Schweitzer, which is the Nobel Prize winner, he said this: each patient carries his own doctor inside him. They come to us not knowing the truth. We are at our best when we give the doctor who resides within each patient a chance to work. When I read that quote, I was actually in pre-med. And something struck me, and I've always kept it close to me because it made me realize that the doctor inside of you is the best doctor that you can ever possibly want. It will not fail you if you trust in it. It will be there for you if you support it, if you nurture it. You know, the Bible says that treat our body as if it was a temple. Most of us, unfortunately, do not take care of our bodies like if it was. When I went to college, I couldn't believe how, in that state of mind, some of the abuse that I was seeing, whether it was eating or alcohol or whatever, because you're in this mode that so many of these young people had never been away from home. And they feel like, oh my gosh, this is my chance to really do everything I want to do in life. And they're so young that you can get over a hangover pretty quickly. So you do it again and you do it again. The reality of it is that that is having an impact in our bodies because it's destroying healthy cells. And granted, our body is amazing and it's going to regenerate and produce healthy cells to replace those. But imagine if you did the opposite and you were actually investing in your body the right nutrition, the right mindset that would allow that body to then regenerate itself a little bit better. So this is the good news. Your body heals from within. And the message that I wanted to send through this book is primarily that we needed to do it primarily through physical, emotional, and spiritual. And when we get into that mode of thinking like that, then we recognize that we have far more power than we thought we had initially. Then we're just not relying on the physical plane like we used to. So let's start with the physical. What are some of the things that physically can help us self-heal? Well, let's start with the foods. Because I can tell you right now that foods is really a big topic of discussion. It's a big topic of discussion because various things. Number one, we live in a society right now that we want to shop in a grocery store that now is processing foods to the point that now they can last on the shelves 3 to 4 weeks when they were really only meant to last 2 days. All that processed food, unfortunately, has a price. And the price is that it's not going to have the right nutrients that you expect to have. So therefore, you're eating perhaps what you think is a healthy meal, but you're not really absorbing all the nutrients that you think you are, all the minerals, all the enzymes, all the vitamins. So, of course, now we're moving more towards organic. And, of course, California has always been ahead of the game because you're very natural-driven here in California, and there was always this organic component to it. Well, now grocery stores, I'm in Texas, and I can tell you that there are more organic foods in the shelves now than there are regular foods. Why? Because they found out that people would spend a little bit more in order to get the right nutrients. But guess what? The pricing now is almost about the same because the demand for organic food has increased to the point that it's not as expensive as it used to be 10, 15 years ago. So there's more farmers growing organically. So that, of course, if the demand is bigger, the pricing drops. So what I did is that in this book, I created my top 25 list of the most self-healing foods that I found through research. And the idea of food that I want to convey to you more than anything is to look at food not necessarily for the way they make you feel. And that's really the way we eat as a society. We eat how we feel. When we're feeling pretty good and all of a sudden you notice you lost 5 pounds and you just want to have that salad for lunch, great. But if you're not feeling good at all and you just had a fight or you're just feeling depressed for some reason, then you go for the fast food and you go for the fried food and you go for the food that are not going to make you as healthy but make you feel better for some reason or nourish some kind of things. You know, there's a strong emotional attachment to foods. And there was a study one time that I read that was actually showing that they did a study in Italy and the United States, and they were comparing how the Italians ate all this incredible pork and sauces that are heavy at night and all this food, but they were not as obese as Americans. And then the conclusion of the study says that the problem in America is that when we ourselves celebrate food, we beat ourselves mentally for it. I can't believe I had that slice of pizza. I can't believe I had that pasta or those carbohydrates. And then you beat yourself up so much that that emotion then turns into, you know, the weight gain that you have. So take a look at some of these. So I'm just going to go over a couple, but look at an apple. You know, many years ago, somebody coined the phrase, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But when I look at an apple right now and I eat an apple, I'm not eating it because it tastes good. In fact, I had an apple this morning after working out. But I'm eating it because I know it's going to improve my digestion. I know that after I have that apple, immediately I'm going to be more regular going to the restroom. And that's a very important function, by the way. Because that's the way that we eliminate the waste in our bodies so the body doesn't absorb it back in, which can create some illnesses for us. Right now, we're seeing so many strokes out there. So many strokes. Imagine if you just ate an apple a day just because every time you eat it, you know that it's going to prevent a stroke in your life. Heart attacks. Every time you eat an apple a day, oh my gosh, I'm just preventing a heart attack. Let's say that you have a history of having heart attacks in your family. I want you to look at food for the value that it has in preventing illness, for the value that it has in nurturing your body with the right nutrients so it does not allow your body to get sick. And when that happens, all of a sudden you have a much healthier body. But here's some of the research that I want you to understand. Just one extra serving of fruits or vegetables a day may reduce the risk of developing cancer. That was in 2007. Now with all this cancer talk, people are saying, what can I do in order to prevent that in my life? Well, there you go. Research shows that refined sugar helps cancer cells proliferate. This is very big in the news right now because the more that we understand what a society of sugar cravers we have, that was one of the biggest links towards the advancement of cancer cells in our bodies. So just reducing the sugar is huge in preventing that from happening. Look at this one. Women who ate approximately one slice of processed meat 2 to 3 times a week for a decade were 50% more likely to develop colon cancer. The reason I'm showing you these studies is because I want you to understand that the science has caught up with what people have been saying for a long time. Maybe you have been reading Louise Hay's books for so many years in which she was telling you this for so many years, and people were like, wow, I wonder if that's true or not. And people began to test it, and they began to having results in their life, and therefore having the impact that Louise has had in people's life all over the world. I want you to know science has caught up to what she intuitively knew many, many years ago. The second most profound thing you can do in the physical body is to move your body. Movement is life. Movement is what allows our bodies to get healthy. And if we just exercise a little bit more, we know that we can do amazing things, you see, because the movement allows your bodies to produce chemicals that are going to make you feel better. If you're depressed, it's going to make you feel happier. In fact, many of us, you know, we go home and we had a very busy day. And guys are very good at that. And they go sit on the couch, get me the remote control, maybe get some fast food along the way, order a slice of pizza, whatever the case may be. But if you just kind of took a walk around the neighborhood and maybe took a brisk walk or get in on a treadmill or something, you will automatically feel better. So here are some of the latest research that we're finding right now in the benefits of exercise. Immune function is big right now because people are getting sick quite a bit. Colds everywhere, allergies. Well, just by exercising, you're producing more T cells, which is one of your biggest immune enhancers. It guards your body against chronic and harmful inflammation. Inflammation is one of the biggest things in science that is what they call the core or foundation for most illnesses out there. So imagine that just working out a little bit is going to give you the opportunity now to give your body what it needs so it can give you the health you want. So I want you to look at exercise not necessarily just because you want to look good. That's one of the side benefits of it. You're going to get more tone. You will lose weight because you will increase your metabolism. Your body's going to break down the foods a little bit better. Your muscles get a little bit tighter. You're going to get a little bit better shape. So all of those things are side effects. They're all positive things that you're going to get from it. But for me, in a self-healing mode, this is far more important because this is actually impacting all the systems in your body that's going to allow you to have the health that you want every single day. In this research, I'm also finding, because I'm very much part of a lot of the integrative medicine movement going on in the world, in which we're recognizing that traditional medicine has tremendous value, but we also have new healing arts that are actually having tremendous impact. So in 1990 and 1997, the New England Journal of Medicine, which is the leading news magazine for medicine, published an article that was showing that there were more visits to alternative practitioners at that time than they were to traditional doctors. And they were showing in that most of those patients did not tell the traditional doctors they were seeking other disciplines. So the New England Journal of Medicine was telling their doctors that was reading this article, please ask your patients and encourage them to tell you if they're going to somewhere else. And they reproduced the study in 1997, 7 years later, and it had also increased. Well, the reason that that's important is because right now we have things such as chiropractic. I chose to be a chiropractor primarily because it changed my world. There were three premises of why I chose chiropractic rather than traditional medicine. The first one was that your body was designed to heal itself. That is one of the biggest premises that we celebrate every single day. So when we look at you as a patient, as a chiropractor, I'm looking at you as a well patient. I'm not looking at you as a sick patient. Then the nervous system is the master system and controls and regulates all the other systems. Without proper nerve supply, your body and your cells cannot function properly. So I wanted to work, remember what I told you earlier, with a system that was really the most important one. I thought I was going to do it through surgery, but that's only in a very limited amount of cases. As a chiropractor, I get to impact the nervous system on an individual from the moment they're born to the moment they're no longer or they're about to pass. And that's very powerful. And the third thing is that there is a universal intelligence that is connected with us as innate intelligence. And that innate intelligence is the inner wisdom of the body. And that the body is a whole. It functions as a whole, not as a part. And that the body is physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Those are the basic premises in our profession that we have been promoting since 1895, that the profession has been around. And still, there's a lot of people that only look at chiropractic only primarily for helping their back and their neck pains. And great, we have a lot of data and research that supports that we're very good at that. But actually, we're far better at the wellness and prevention than anything else that we do. Acupuncture, I became an acupuncturist too because I was very interested in energy medicine as a student. I wanted to understand what energy was all about. And the Chinese, for 5,000 years, imagine, they had bamboo needles in those days. It wasn't metal. It was bamboo needles that they were sticking in. And all of that stuff that they were printed since 5,000 years ago was proven through science over the last 30 years. All of those points, all of those meridians, 12 meridians, what I call energy pathways, all of those have been already scientifically validated in today's science. How do they know that? By trial and error. They would say patients responded well when they put a needle here, when they put a needle there, and that's a profession that is growing by leaps and bounds all over the world. Yoga, flexibility is the key as we age. Pilates has the same concept. We have to keep moving our bodies. Flexibility is very critical for us to be able to function to the degree that we need to. So if you haven't tried this, I'm sharing it with you because in the book I go more in detail about the benefits, but I wanted to share with you the ones that I believe are Qigong, similar to acupuncture, but it does it through exercises. And what you're doing is that you are taking advantage of not the inner energy of your body, but also the external energy, and you're having a dance with the universe. And that dance allows you to flow much better than if you don't do it. And that's really some of the longest living people in the United States. This is the one thing they have in common. Cold laser is one of the latest breakthroughs in technology, that this laser light, which is non-invasive, it's a cold laser, so it's just a beam of light, it doesn't burn, can reduce inflammation sometimes by 10 times the amount of time. We're using it right now with a lot of the Olympic athletes and a lot of professional athletes because they got to get on the field that afternoon or the next day. If you haven't experimented and you're going through a lot of inflammation or chronic pain, that's something that I want you to consider. Massage is booming, 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 booming in the United States. And I think it's two reasons for it. The first one is touch. Touch is healing. Whenever you get touch, it's a very healing experience. But also, it gives you 30 or 50 minutes that you actually unwind and escape from the distresses and of the world. So you're giving yourself permission that most of us don't. I mean, I've been in cultures in which you still take a nap after lunch. It's one of the healthiest things you can do as you get older. But in the United States, can you imagine telling a friend, oh yeah, what are you doing this afternoon? Oh, I'm going to take a nap and then I'm go back to work. We don't do that. We're rushing through lunch. Everything is always a rush. Rush, 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 rush. And we're paying a big price for that. Our family integrity is suffering because of that. We're getting sicker because we're not having enough fun. It's always work, work, work. You can never make enough, it seems like. Have you realized that we are living in our need, in our wants and not in our needs? Our basic needs as human beings are so basic, and they don't cost a lot of money. In fact, a lot of it is free. Like having healthy relationships, that's free. It takes effort. You know, exercise, you don't have to join a gym. It's nice if you join a gym, but you can still exercise on your own. That's free. But then you have also the wants. It's like it seems like you never have enough. Want, 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 want. And that world, unfortunately, will never get you. And then homeopathy. Homeopathy is really big in Europe. How many Europeans here? And when I was in Europe, and I've lived there a couple of times, I was amazed because in the United States, it hasn't caught up as much, even though it's still there. But in Europe, it's really more popular. And it's one of the main things that people go to before they actually go see a traditional doctor. And that's primarily based on energy also. So here are some examples that you can actually benefit from. So let's move into the emotional, because the emotional to me primarily is based on thoughts. Your thinking is what will dictate what you become. We've heard that plenty of times. When we were filming The Law of Attraction in the movie The Secret, we were talking about what you think about, you attract into your life. The more you think about it, the more you attract it. The reality right now is that most of us are really having stinking thinking. Would you agree? I mean, it seems like we are just thinking the pits. And we have a problem, and instead of thinking solutions, we dwell on the problem over and over again, and guess what that does? It manifests the problem even more. In fact, sometimes you create your own problems just by the way you're thinking about them, because you're dwelling on it so much. But the reason that I wanted to bring this to your attention is because there's a lot of data that is already showing that our thinking has a lot to do with our self-healing. Optimism is one of the things that actually has been published quite a bit in the research lately, because it's talking about how the more optimistic that we are about the outcome, the more likely that we are to self-heal, regardless of the illness. But to be optimistic, sometimes it requires effort. Would you agree? It's a lot easier to just complain, to get that sympathy. Oh, poor me. I give you an example. So recently, I met a friend of mine that is one of my neighbors, and I hadn't really gotten to know him. But he wanted to spend some time with me, so we had breakfast together. And he says to me, I wanted to meet you because my mother is a lady that's never been sick a day of her life, has 83 years old. And she was just diagnosed with breast cancer. And the one thing that is her weakness is that if it's a diagnosis or a condition like that, mentally, she cannot handle it. So the woman became very extremely depressed within 24 hours, to the point of like, I don't want to move. I don't have any energy to move. The whole family rushed in. They were just very concerned, to the point that they were going to hospitalize her. So I said to her, I said, well, would you give me an opportunity to just meet with her and just get to know her? And one of the things that was happening is that there was somebody that she knew that was diagnosed with cancer many years ago. And when the diagnosis of cancer came her way, that individual passed on, and she felt that this was a death sentence. But it's interesting because there are many things that you can do right now to prevent the cancers. And now if you catch it early, there have so many wonderful things that you can also do. So one of the things that I want you to understand is your mindset, regardless of how you perceive the illness, has a lot to do with what the outcome of that illness will be. And the research has now shown that if you perceive an illness as something that is not devastating or a sentence to kill you, you have a tremendous opportunity to shift that into something more positive, in which you will have more blessings into your life. Anger, repression of all those negative emotions have already been shown to be one of the biggest reasons why people get sick. I like the second one where it says that married couples that relieve their arguments, they heal 40% slower. Now, how many of you are in a relationship? Do you recall sometimes that we go over arguments again and again, especially the longer that we've been with them? Why do we do that? Why not just move on? But there's something about it that we just want to be right sometimes. And we just want to be right to such a degree that even if it hurts us, even if it doesn't allow us to heal, we're willing to still do it because we want to be right. In this journey of self-healing, one of the biggest discoveries that I've made is this, and I call it the trust factor. Because as I study different patients and what allowed them to heal, there was one thing in common. The patients that trusted whatever the treatment they chose, it didn't matter what the treatment was, whether it was chiropractic, medicine, homeopathy, macrobiotic diet, nutrition. If they trusted that that treatment was the right treatment for them, they had a much higher percentage of healing. It was very critical that they did that. Now, many of us, unfortunately, are doing things that we are not really trusting in and that we're hesitating and doubtful. And as soon as you have doubt in whatever treatment you selected, immediately you're limiting your self-healing ability. So the reason I'm bringing it to your attention is because I want you to trust and believe in whatever treatment you're doing. As long as you yourself knows that this is the right form for me, that's critical. The second thing that made all the difference in the world in how quickly people self-heal is trusting in the provider of that treatment. Regardless of what it was, whether you went to a nutritionist and changed your diet, whether you went to a psychic, whether you went to a psychologist, whether you went to whoever you went to, if you trusted that that individual was the right healthcare provider to help you deal with this illness, then you had a much higher level of success. And then the last one is by far the most important one. When you trusted your body to be able to heal it. See, most of us sometimes, we don't think that our bodies can heal things. And what's interesting about that is when I cut my hand and I have a slight cut for whatever reason, I can watch my hand actually heal. Would you agree? But just because we can't see that inside of us, then we can't. A good friend of mine was an oncologist named Bernie Siegel. How many of you have heard of Bernie? And you know, Bernie, in the late 80s and 90s, he was probably considered the most influential oncologist in the world. Wrote many books about it. He's still in the lecture circuit. And I remember Bernie sharing with me that as he was treating cancer patients, he said that this last one was so critical because the patients did all kinds of things to be able to heal. But the one thing that always stood out for him is when that cancer patient would walk into his office and said, "Well, you know, Dr. Siegel, I'm not ready to go anywhere. So whatever we got to do, we're going to get this thing fixed because I got a long life to live and I got grandchildren I got to see and I got to do this and I got to do that." And these are individuals that recognize that they were not ready to move on. On the other hand, the individuals that were given a sentence of, let's say, a year, typically died sooner than that because they were already in the mind frame that they already left. And when a doctor used to say, "Well, it's probably important for you to get your affairs in order," and you got your affairs in order, typically you were diseased earlier than anticipated. So I want you to have a fighting spirit. I want you to recognize that no illness out there has control over your body, that your body has this incredible power. It's the most powerful, biggest miracle that we ever have discovered during our civilization. It's how miracles can happen every single day, our bodies, the way they function. And we're just starting to explore the brain. And I know you're going to have, you know, Bruce Lipton talking to you later on tomorrow. Fascinating. I mean, there's so many incredible speakers here that you're just going to get so much information from for you to feed that information. But remember, you have to walk out of here saying, "What? I can do it." Say it again. One more time. Because that is the key. The key is that you're going to get all this information, but you have to believe that you can do this thing. You can create the life of your dreams. You can create and attract the relationship of your dreams. You don't have to settle for what you have right now. You can change who you are, and everything around you will change automatically. That's how we manifest the future. So look at some of these studies. I mean, this is kind of interesting because one of the things that we discover is that creativity is very healing. And many people always talk about how the arts are not that important anymore. And many school districts are actually taking away the music and the arts programs of the schools, when art has already been shown to be one of the greatest healers there is. Because it allows your body to go into your creative mind. It gets you away from your thinking, from thinking of the illness, and creating something constructive, whether it's pottery, sketching, whether it's music, whether it's dance. You know, I started doing Zumba. How many of you do Zumba? Is that fun? Like, you know? I love it. I mean, I'm the only guy in my class, I gotta tell you. And these ladies love me. I mean, we just have so much fun. And they're really kind to me. But I go in there and I just like start strutting my stuff and they're like looking at me and like. And I realized that many of them have shared with me how their bodies have healed just because of doing some things like Zumba. You know, doing some kind of aerobics class. You know, in Dallas, we have Dr. Ken Cooper, which is the father of aerobics. And he's got research after research how aerobics have helped the body heal. Well, I want you to pay some attention to it. Look at this, Alzheimer's. How many of you know somebody with Alzheimer's? It's one of the biggest things that is growing in the United States and all around the world. And music allows the individuals to reconnect with the brain cells, to reconnect with the memories that they're losing. Why are we not taking advantage of that in our everyday life? And that's why I'm such a proponent of the arts, because I don't want us to lose the arts. If our children do not grow up with some of those arts like we did, then what tools do they have when they get older to vent off stress of work or relationship? You know, how many people have picked up a musical instrument that they became great at because it was just a way that they could escape? And many musicians have said that in life. And it's just also very beautiful. But another discovery in the emotional world that I found was what I call the healing triad. And this, to me, is one of the most powerful things that I can share with you. These three emotions are the three emotions that are the most powerful in allowing your body to self-heal. And there's so much data to support that. And the reason for that is very simple. Because all of these three emotions allow you to move towards the present. And all self-healing happens on the moment right now. Right now. And do you know that healing can be instantly? I mean, there are so many documented cases in which tumors have just fallen out of the skin, out of the body. And people that had skin conditions like psoriasis and all that, within 24 hours has cleared up completely, even though they've been suffering with that for years. There are so many things, and these are the three things that I kept finding from everything that I was studying, everything that I was experiencing with patients and other people's patients. The emotion that allows us to remove away or move away from the past or living in the past is forgiveness. Anytime that you find yourself dwelling on some past emotion, anytime that you start thinking about that boyfriend of you that left you and stood you up for the prom because they went out with the cheerleader instead of you, or that guy that promised you the world at 17 years old, and all of a sudden he was gone as soon as you slept with him. Or that girl that promised you that she will love you forever and there will never be another guy in her life, and all of a sudden, 2 months later, she's going out with somebody else and he could be even your best friend. You have to let that go. You have to let go of all the resentments, all the anger, all the pain of the past. And forgiveness is one emotion that allows you to do that so beautifully. And it doesn't mean that the person has to be in front of you, because you're not forgiving them for their sake. You're forgiving you for your sake. Does that make sense? I was recently on the Dr. Phil show, and it was kind of interesting because I didn't know he was going to bring a patient as he was talking to me. And this patient had been on a wheelchair. How many of you saw that episode? And he was 5 years old, and a young, drunk lady that was 19 years old, I think it was drunk driving, hit their car, and it was an accident. Well, at 5 years old, it left him paralyzed. It killed the father. It injured the mother, and it killed the older sister. So it killed the father and the sister in this accident. The mother survived. The child survived. And I'll never forget, because Dr. Phil just brought him in and said, it's so funny. He's going into commercial and he's saying to the audience, and now Dr. Mancini and I are going to take this bull by the horns and we're going to take care of this thing with Joe, which is the patient. And I'm sitting there myself and saying, take this bull by the horn? What is he wanting from me? I'm such a different style of personality, because I'm not like all in your face, even though I want you to think about things. And I know Phil, he's been my patient for 14 years, so we're very close. But he brought that up. And when the man came out, and the only thing I could think about is the fact that I said to the man, you're not forgiving her for her sake. You may have to forgive yourself for living. Because he had been holding for 40 years this resentment, and all he wanted was for her to say, I'm sorry. Joe, I destroyed your life. I'm sorry. And that was the outcome of that. And the man had a shift right there in front of the cameras that was beautiful, because he recognized that it didn't matter whether she forgave him or not. Whether he forgave her or not. It didn't matter whether she asked for forgiveness or not. The important thing is that he needed to forgive her. He needed to forgive himself for living. Because living in that wheelchair for 40 years, he felt like a prisoner. I called it an emotional jail. Forgive everyone out in the past. So one of the exercises that I want you to have is that I want you to write down anyone in your past that has ever hurt you. Any experience that really hurt you, whatever that may be. You got fired from your first job and your boss was really mean. Or perhaps you went to your teacher and said, I'm going to be this, and the teachers just talked you completely out of it. Or perhaps you grew up in a household in which the parents had to work, or they were not together. Or perhaps they were not supportive and they were saying, yo, you'll never amount to anything. Stop thinking like that. Stop dreaming. Get to work. Whatever it is, you need to forgive them. Because by forgiving them, you're releasing all of that anger. You're releasing all of that emotion that's creating all this chemistry inside your body that is not allowing cells to regenerate healthy, but you're actually regenerating cells unhealthy. And that's what creates a lot of the illnesses of today. You know, Hans Selye was the father of stress. And he differentiated stress as positive and distress as negative. And he said that over 90% of all illnesses, and this is 1957, over 90% of all illnesses are caused because of distress. Forgiveness is one thing that allows you to remove that completely from your past. And it moves you into the present because now you're not dwelling on it anymore. Or you're not expecting just because something happened in the past is going to repeat itself into the future. You're releasing it completely. So let me give you some suggestions on how to do that. These are some things that I've learned. So you write whatever it is on a piece of paper, and you get a can, and then you light it on fire, and you let it go. Or you throw it into a fireplace. In Asia, they have a wonderful custom in which they write the message in a balloon, and then they release the balloon into the air. And that's another metaphor for releasing that into your life. But I want you to identify at least three things in your life that you have been carrying for too long, and I want you to release it. Let's move into gratitude. Gratitude is the one thing that keeps us away from the future. Because you see, remember when I said earlier that we're living in our wants rather than our needs? When you have gratitude, you're constantly being appreciative of what you have in front of you right now. Maybe your car is not the nicest car in the world, but it takes you places. Would you agree? Maybe your house is not the nicest house in the neighborhood, but it's a warm shelter that keeps you warm in the winter especially. Maybe you don't have the fanciest clothes, but you know what? You have clothes. I've grown up in a third world country. I know what not having is all about. I never forget my older brother was dating this girl from the United States, and they went to South America to visit my family. And she got to this area where close to where we live, and she noticed that over 80% of the kids didn't have shoes, and they were walking barefooted. So she took out all of the money that she had. She maxed out all the credit cards, and she started buying shoes for all those kids. And my brother said to her, I said, do you realize that those kids don't see not having shoes as a negative? Because that's all they know. They're the happiest kids. They play soccer with no balls. They make up things out of rags. You know, in Spanish, we call it bola de trapo, which is that you make up a soccer ball out of rags, and then that's how you maneuver the ball, and you get to be a really good soccer player because of that. And they don't know any difference. They don't have fields that have grass on it. It's pure sand. They don't know the difference. So I know what it's like not having. But I want you to understand that gratitude allows you to, and there's plenty of research that has already proven this, it allows you to focus on the present. It allows you to really understand what you have. So let me give you an example, okay? So this is how the universe works. How many of you are parents again? How many of you have children? Oh, same question, huh? Just testing you. So imagine you have a child, right? I have two kids. And kids are very good at asking for things. Would you agree? So they see the commercials, right? They're watching Nickelodeon, they're watching the Disney Channel, and of course, every other commercial is something for the kids. So they come to you and they say, Daddy, Daddy, I want this, I want this. And you keep saying, no, you don't need that. Daddy, Daddy, I want this, I want this. So then after, you know, a couple of weeks of that, you go ahead and buy it, whatever it is. Let's say it's a Nintendo game or Xbox 360, whatever it is. And then you find out that they buy the game, but then all of a sudden they don't take care of it or they break it. Or they lend it out to somebody and forget to ask for it back. Or they lose it. Now, how likely are you, next time that they are in their mode of asking, to buy that another game for them? Less likely, right? And if that happens twice or three times, less and less likely. Well, guess what? The universe works the same way. If already the universe is providing for you your needs, but you're living your life like you don't have enough, like it's just never enough, like you look at your closet and you just have this expression. And that's one of the things I love about Louise, is because she wakes up every single day just thanking everything around her, because it's a gratitude. It's not how fancy things are. It's the fact that you have something. It's your attitude behind what you have that really allows the universe to give you more of that into your life. So I want you to begin to think differently about the things you do have in your life. You know, in a relationship, it's very interesting because, you know, I noticed that as we're dating somebody, you know, we groom ourselves. We even lose a little bit of weight. You know, we go shopping. We want to be nice for that date. And then we're dating and we're courting. And then after a couple of years, boom, we get married. And then we spend the rest of the time trying to change that person that we love so much the way they just were to try to make him more like us. That's the definition of marriage for a lot of people. And I never understood that because in a relationship, to be grateful in a relationship is that you're focusing on your attention on the good things of that relationship, on the perfections of that individual rather than the imperfections of that individual. And it's so easy to get stuck into the imperfections because you talk yourself into, oh, you know, I can't believe that you just take so long to get dressed. Or I can't believe you just sit on the couch and you can watch TV all day long. Whatever the case may be, just be grateful for the things that you do appreciate in that relationship and acknowledge those to those individuals. And guess what happens? The universe will give you more of those things into your relationship. But if you focus on the things that you don't like about that person, guess what the universe gives you? More of those things that you don't like about that person. And then, of course, that leads to over 60% divorce rate in the United States. Let me tell you something. There's no relationship that is perfect. Every relationship requires compromise. It requires respect. It requires patience. Because we are not perfect. You know, Wayne Dyer taught me 24 years ago, and I'll never forget this statement that he says, we are not human beings living a spiritual experience, but we're actually spiritual beings living a human experience. And all I could think about ever since that moment is that as spiritual beings, we're perfect. As human beings, we're imperfect. As soon as we come out of that womb into the world, you know, you like that? As soon as we come out into the world, we become imperfect. Why? Because we live in an imperfect world. But imagine how beautiful it would be if you can only look at the perfection of every individual in front of you. If we can only look at those positive traits, even when they don't see that in themselves. That, in my opinion, is what living in that level of amazing world, you know, of, I call it the next thing, which is a world of unconditional love. You see, love is the one thing that allows us to be able to be completely in the present, but it all starts with ourselves. And the biggest challenge with love is the fact that many of us don't love ourselves enough, so how can we love somebody else? How can we do that? How many of us are really, really good to ourselves? Very few of us. Many of us don't wake up every day acknowledging how wonderful I am. We're noticing the imperfections. Oh, look at that wrinkle. Can't believe it. You know, my teeth are not white enough. Oh, look at these clothes are fitting a little too tight. Whatever the case may be, that's what we're focusing on. And guess what? When you focus on that, everybody around you will focus on that too, because that's what you're projecting. But if you're loving yourself enough to realize that whatever it is, it's okay. That whatever it is good enough. In fact, one of the things that I say to myself every single day is that I'm good enough just the way I am. Because sometimes I try to do too much. I mean, I know. I get myself into these roles that I just want to save the world kind of thing. And it's very overwhelming sometimes. And I have to remind myself that just the way that I am is just perfect for that moment. If there's something that I can change about the way that I am that I don't like about myself, then I do something about it. But let's say that my stature, right? If I'm too tall or if I think I'm too tall or too short, maybe I can't change that, right? But I can change the way I look at myself and begin to recognize that I'm just the perfect height. Because if you talk to those girls that are 6'1" or 5'10", they'll tell you they wish they were shorter. And if you talk to the ones that are 5'4", 5'2", they tell you they wish they were taller. You will never be happy if that's your attitude. But if you just absorb it, embrace it. So the love that I'm talking about here is what I call unconditional love. And I'm actually thinking that that's going to be my next book. There's so much data. There's so much amazing stories how unconditional love is the greatest healer of all. And I want you to learn that the unconditional love for yourself is the foundation for what I call your self-esteem. And your self-esteem is what directly dictates the good things that you will attract into your life. There is no way that the universe will give you more money into your life if you don't have a self-esteem that thinks it's worthy of more money. Does that make sense? There's no way. There's no way that the universe works like that. The universe is too smart. There's no way that the universe is going to give you a better man if you don't think you're worthy of even the one you have right now. It doesn't work like that. Or a better girlfriend or a better spouse. The universe is not going to give you a better job if you don't think you're worth it of the ones that you have right now because you've settled, you're compromised. And that's the biggest challenge, is that we settle. We settle to the point that we just think this is all I can get. You live right now in the most amazing country in the world. I have lived in other countries. I travel all over the world. I see that what you have here in the United States is unprecedented in anywhere else I've been in the world. And you still find people saying, I can't do my business because I don't have any money. In a country that you have more venture capitals and banks willing to give you money if you just ask for it and prepare for it properly. The one country that you don't have to, that you have precedence, that you don't have to have a high education to become successful in your dream. That you don't have to have come from a great family and a branding name to be able to succeed. That if your idea and you don't have a place to, or you don't have the money to fund it, that you will find somebody to fund it for you. This is a country that anything is possible if you believe it's possible. But most people don't believe enough in themselves. Most people don't love themselves enough, so their self-esteem is very low. It's very, very low. And we don't love yourself enough, guess what? We're not good to ourselves. We hurt ourselves. You know, Deepak Chopra asked me to do a talk one time, and it's the only time I've ever given it in my life, and this was after September 11. We all went to Puerto Rico, and he started a new foundation, and he asked me if I would support it. And the topic of the conversation was, and it was 150 leaders around the world, and he was talking about bringing more peace into the world. And my message was that there could never be external peace until there is internal peace. And that the reason why we don't have internal peace is because most of us are not worthy, don't think we're worthy of being in peace. You see that restlessness that we see all over the world? That restlessness that creates wars and arguments and all of that is typically the ego talking. It's the self-esteem that is so low that you will hurt yourself despite of whether it's right or wrong. That's wrong. That just doesn't make any sense to me. Because when you're feeling good about yourself, don't you do nice things for yourself? Be honest. When you're feeling good about yourself, you're not going to put up with somebody being negative around you. In fact, you don't even attract negative people around you during that time that you're positive. But when you're feeling down and depressed and low self-esteem, guess what? They're all coming in and saying, hey, group huddle, let's just talk about how bad this world is. And that's really what happens. So you have control over that, but you have to find a way to love yourself a little bit more. So an exercise that I would suggest is writing on a piece of paper all the positive attributes that you love about yourself. And really spend time on it. Don't just write one or two things. Write as many as you can. Focus on those things every single day. Read them as affirmations. You know? I love the fact that I have an accent. You know, I've been living in the United States since 1978. You would think by now I would have lost this accent. And recently I was introduced as the Antonio Banderas of healing. I thought it was kind of sexy. You know, but the reality of it is that it's just who I am, you know, and I don't make apologies for it. It's who I am. And I think it's kind of nice to be able to do something and be something a little bit unique. You know, when I was little, I remember when I was 14 and 15, we went on cruises. And I had a really hard time telling my name to young people when I would meet them in cruises. So I would say my name was Tony. So guess how I came up with Tony? How many of you remember the movie with John Travolta, Saturday Night Fever? Tony Manero? You know? Staying alive. Well, that came out during that same time, so I was actually saying to myself, wow, that's a pretty cool name. So I'll be Tony Mancini. Not Tony Manero, Tony Mancini. So my mom started getting letters at my house saying Tony Mancini, and she was throwing them away. So one day I caught her and I said, Mom, what are you doing? That's for me. Say, I don't have a son named Tony. So I'm throwing him away. And I said, that's it. You're going to have to call the attorneys. I'm changing my name legally. So then I find out I had to wait until I was 18. So my mom said, in her wisdom, okay, wait until 18 and we'll call the attorney and we'll see. If you still want to do it, we'll do it. And then what I found as I got older is that my name, Fabrizio, is a very unique name. And the older I get, the more attractive it becomes when I go places because it's unique. Now, granted, people call me Dr. Fab, and that's actually, you know, my branding, but I love my name for that purpose. And you got to find those things that you love about yourself. You got to just look at those attributes. All of you have that inside of you. You just have to find it and focus on that rather than the alternative. The healing spirit is the other component in this journey of ours, because as I mentioned earlier, that just when you run into a limitation in your physical body, you can access your emotions, you can access all these wonderful things that I share with you to be able to get to a higher level of healing. But then even with those emotions, you get to the point that maybe they're not getting their job done, and you have to tap into what I call the spiritual healing plane. And the spiritual healing to me is one that is not necessarily about religion. It's about believing in something greater than yourself. It's about connecting to something bigger than yourself. You know, we have a statement that I heard many times ago, many years ago in chiropractic that says, the power that made the body heals the body. And I've never forgotten that. The power that made the body heals the body. And you have to tap into that power. I call it hope. You know, right now, many of us are dealing with conditions that maybe you're not seeing a lot of hope around you. Maybe you're not experiencing too many people that have gotten over that condition. You have to still have hope that maybe your body is going to be the first and only body that will do it. But you have to believe enough in it, because the power of belief is so important in healing. Believing in something that the body can heal. And, you know, there were some studies, and I'm only going to bring some of them to you because they're just so amazing, you know. People that could not forgive take longer from healing from illness, and we talked a little bit about that. Listen to this one. People in the hospital who never attend the church have longer hospital stay, up to 3 times longer on average than those who attend church regularly. These are all studies. Heart patients who undergo surgery are less likely to suffer complications if they're involved in a religious practice. There are fewer suicides among religious people, according to data. One study discovered that non-churchgoers were 4 times more likely to kill themselves. Now, if you have a religion, the thing that I'm asking you to do is to explore that religion a little bit deeper and to find the value of that religion, not based on the belief systems of your parents, but your own belief systems. Because it's very hard to sustain something, especially during difficult times, when you're living on the belief systems of somebody else. How many of you understand that? Many of us have adapted the belief systems of others as our own. And the reason that our life is not working as well is because we have no control over them. They're not ours in the first place. So we just adopted them. But when you have belief systems that are strong enough, what you'll find is that those belief systems are going to be your greatest supporters into self-healing. Listen to some of this. People of faith tend to drink less alcohol, smoke less, and not abuse drugs. Two groups of heart patients. This is interesting because you hear a lot about when you are sick and people tell you, oh, I'm going to pray for you. Half of the patients were prayed for by a Christian group, yet unaware of the prayers on their behalf. The other half of the control group were not prayed for. The first group who received the prayer healed much better and required fewer medical interventions than the control group. I mean, and you have over and over the Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, American Indians, or the spiritual healers prayed on 1 hour daily for 48 patients. After 6 months, the patient who have been prayed for has significantly better medical outcomes. I want you to understand that there's plenty of data that supports what Luis was talking about many years ago. And many of the speakers this weekend that are sharing with you what they're seeing every single day in their daily lives. I don't want you to take that for granted. And the reason I brought this research is only for you to recognize that we're there, but we're not acting on it. We're not acting on it. And it's very important that we do. So after I finished this journey, I was saying to myself, okay, so where do I take you now? Now, we've went to a journey from, you know, where health comes from, the sick care, the health care. And then I share with you some of the things that you can do on a physical plane to help yourself heal. And then on the emotional plane. And the book is full of stories after stories of people that have healed and how they did it. But then I said to myself, okay, but how are we going to act on it? And then I was reading a study that was showing that an average habit takes 21 days to build. Do you realize that? That if you want to change anything in your life and make it a habit, you need a minimum of 21 days to do it. That's not a lot of time. That's less than a month. So I said to myself, okay, if we're going to take people into this journey and paradigm shift into the power of self-healing, then what I want to do is really actually help you develop the habit of self-healing so you can then take it for the rest of your life. The 21 days is only the beginning that will help you then be an unconscious thought. An automatic. So in these 21 days, I broke it into the first week that is physical, the second week emotional, and the third week. And in the 21 days, I give you menus that you can do for your breakfast, your lunch, your dinners. I give you thoughts of the days, etc. But for the purpose of this presentation, I'm just going to go over some of the basic things that I want you to take home with us this afternoon. The first one is you got to eat to heal. Remember what I said earlier. I want you to look at food from a different perspective. I want you to look at food for what it's going to do for my healing rather than how is it going to make me feel. Your emotions will catch up to your healing, I promise you. When you're feeling healthy, your emotions will be the most positive they've ever been. But if you let your emotional chaos dictate your nutritional intake every single day, that's the mess that we're in. That's why fast foods are so popular right now, because we don't have enough self-worth to actually prepare our foods. We just want to go in and drive through and actually pay a lot of times more money than if you prepare the foods at home with having less nutrition value. You know, I was in San Diego on the Fox News, and the lady wanted to talk about this 21-day diet, program, and she wanted me to do a smoothie. She wanted me to show the audience how in less than a minute you can have a vegetable and a fruit smoothie that would taste so wonderful, that will have more nutrients than you can ever imagine. Less than a minute. How long does it take you to drive to McDonald's, to Burger King, to all these places, wait in line, if it's lunch hours, even longer, and then you're eating something that necessarily doesn't feel right in your stomach and in digestive system, but it gave you some comfort. I want you to learn to eat to heal. Devise a personalized supplement regimen. I didn't go over a lot of the supplements, but I identified the top supplements to build your immune system, to develop your brain, to be able to have a healthy digestive system. I wanted you to understand that the reason that I'm talking about supplements is not because I don't think you can get that from regular food. It's that it's very difficult in today's time sometimes to eat all the right foods at all times. So at least you can benefit from having supplements to support the foods that you're not taking. And that way you can then have the right vitamins, minerals, and enzymes to be able to help your body function at a higher level. And you must have something, depending on your chemistry. The way that I do it, every 6 months, I do my blood work. And then I test my blood work to find out what systems are not working as well. And then I find my supplements and I dictate my supplements based on that blood work. Formulate your healing workout plan. The workout plan, I'm not saying that you have to join the gym tomorrow. What I'm saying is I want your bodies to start moving. If you go to work, I want you to park a little farther out so you can walk to work. Instead of taking the elevators, I want you to take the stairs. While you're in the chair, you know, I'm seeing a lot of ergonomic chairs right now, but I'm also seeing a lot of those medicine balls where you can actually do exercises while you're sitting in your computer. And you can work on your core work. So I want you to be thinking creatively, what can I do to get my body moving? I want you to get home and instead of turning that TV right away to mentally decompress, perhaps take a walk. You know, if you have a treadmill machine or any of those machines, do something with it. Figure out which natural, complementary, alternative interventions may benefit you. This is very critical. Many people right now are not looking outside traditional medicine. And the thing is that traditional medicine doesn't have all the answers. If traditional medicine had all the answers, we would not be as unhealthy as we are as a society. If we needed more drugs in the world, which is not the answer either, we will be a much healthier society. We are the number one consumption of drugs in the world. Do you realize that 25% of our children 16 and below are medicated on antidepressants? Do you realize that individuals that are adults 65 and over are taking a minimum of 3 pills a day on average? What kind of life is that? Drugs are not the answer. Chemistry is not the answer for the healthcare problems of today. Now, granted, they can maybe manage symptoms at a time, and I'm going to give that credit to it, but they're not going to be the healers. Only the body heals. Only the body heals. So why not take advantage of that healing the way I'm showing to you? Begin to make peace with the doctor within. I want you to look at yourself in the mirrors and say to yourself every day with affirmations that you are a self-healing agent. Your body was destined to heal. Your body is created to heal. Whatever it is that you're trying to heal. There are so many stories of patients that have claimed that just with that, they have healed things that they would never thought they could possibly heal. When we start going into the emotional component, we want to recognize your thought patterns. I want to know whether you are more pessimist or a positive or an optimistic person. I want you to catch yourself as to the conversations that you're having, not only with your friends and coworkers, but what's that internal dialogue saying? Do you realize that the internal dialogue is your most powerful source of dialogue that you can have? It's not what other people tell you. It's what you're thinking about when they're telling you. Because you are filtering all the information, just like I'm saying to you things right now, every single one of you is hearing something different. Why? Because you're filtering it through your own filters of inner dialogue. So I want you to start thinking more positive. I want you to start working on emotions that heal. And begin to take advantage of that. Become more optimistic. I want you to wake up every single day saying to yourself, this is going to be the greatest day of my life. Great things will happen every single day. Today is the day that I get great news. I mean, start expecting positive things to happen in your life. And I promise you, positive things will begin to show up. I know that sometimes that sounds far-fetched, but it does work. It does work, and all it takes is for you to do a little bit every single day. And that's why I want you to give yourself permission to at least do 21 days of this and feel the effort for yourself. Build your trust factor. Whatever you're choosing right now for your treatment, for your delivery service, and for your body's ability to heal it, you must trust in it. Just like you have a trusted friendship with your most close friend or a family member or your parents, I want you to trust just as much whoever it is you're working with, because that trust is going to set up an internal mechanism that is going to allow your body to heal much faster than if you don't. And then cultivate hope. There's a lot of naysayers out there. Do some of you know some of those people in your life? It's all around us, right? I don't know why people take such a joy in the negative news, you know? You know, there's been studies done that the reason that news on television are not positive is that every study that they've done, when they've shown positive news, the ratings go down. Every single study. So they have to sensationalize all the news. They have to make it bigger than it is. They have to repeat it so many times so it looks like there's been 500 rapes that day instead of 2. Or there's been, 100 killings that day instead of 4. But they repeat it so many times that it just becomes like the whole culture is in this thing. And the funny thing is that we're watching these reality shows right now, and many Americans are taking pleasure in watching these kids and these individuals have reckless lives. And you know why I think that is? Because it makes our lives feel a little bit better. I mean, think about it. Jersey Shore? I mean, come on. I saw one episode, and I just couldn't believe it. I just told my wife and my kids, I just said, why would they put this on TV? You know? And it became so huge. That's the other thing. And he's one of the biggest kids in the young generation. They think that's cool. That's why I believe that we have to do the right programming. You know, Hay House is putting these movies for a purpose, because we can't get this message out enough. And granted, we can do these events, you know, every few weeks in different cities around the world, but we got to get the message out to the rest of the world. That's why it's important that we watch that type of programming. That's why it's important why we have tapes in our cars, CDs in our cars, you know, downloaded into your phones. You know, now this thing called Bluetooth, have you heard of it? I walk into my car. Before, it used to be CDs, and I had to change. Well, at first it was 8 tracks, then it was cassettes, then it was CDs. So thank God it's getting smaller. But now it's Bluetooth. So I have thousands of lectures in my phone. As soon as I get into my car and turn on the car, shoo, a different speaker comes on. And I've learned to trust that whatever comes on is what I was meant to hear that day. And that's the way I'm learning now, because my library has been in my car for the last 30-something years, when I started this journey of understanding that there was so much to life than what I was giving credit to. There was so much that we could have if we just allow ourselves to have it. You know, there were so many people that I saw around me that were just frustrated, that just did not find a way for them to get out of their rut. And I just chose that was not going to be me, that I wanted something different for my life. And I began that process and I began that journey. And then, of course, you can't do it by yourself, but that's when you read the books that you read. That's when you hear the messages that you hear. That's why you attend programs like this, that all of us are a community that we all have the one thing in common. We all want something better for ourselves. We all are looking for something better, and we know it's attainable. But then we become each other's support system. That's why it's important to stay in communication. That's why it's important to go and become a like the Facebook page, so you get those positive messages, or you get that meditation for the day, or that positive statement. I mean, I love the fact that there's such a world out there. And granted, we're not the majority, but we're the ones making the biggest changes in the world because of what we're doing. We're making the most positive contributions into the world. And you're a part of that. You're a part of something so much bigger than we all give credit to. But you got to have hope. I want you to think every single day that even if it's not out there, even if you haven't met somebody that has dealt with and healed from this condition, that you are going to be able to do it, that your body is capable of doing it. Because if you do believe, chances are that you will attract that. And then on the spiritual sense, you got to nurture your spirit. You got to nurture that side of us that sometimes we don't spend enough time with. You know, learn to meditate. Learn to pray. Learn to spend some quiet time. And you know, interesting, because as I learned meditation, I'll never forget my first teacher just told me to breathe and focus on my breathing. In through your nose, out through your mouth. And just focus on that enough times and just try to calm your mind so you can listen to that inner voice. Do you know that all your answers are inside of yourselves? One of the things that I learned early on in my life, and I think it was by reading Napoleon Hill, is that if you ask yourself and your inner wisdom to give you an answer to a problem before you go to bed at night, most likely you'll get the answer of that problem by the time you wake up that morning. You got to trust in that. You got to trust in that spirit inside of you that is connected with something much bigger than ourselves. We all got to support one another. You got to connect with relationships around you and then let go of those toxic relationships that are bringing you down. Individuals that are constantly tearing you apart, that are demeaning you, and that are making you feel even lower than you already feel, or that are abusing you verbally or physically. There is no room for that in our lives. All of those things are the things that keep us from self-healing, and we allow it. It's a choice. But the nice thing is that as you surround yourself with positive people, with people that are nurturing, all of a sudden you find that it's totally the opposite. You start attracting more of those people into your life. And instead of doing destructive things or destructive things that are going to hurt your body, you start doing healthy things. And you start doing things that are more uplifting, that make you feel a little bit more alive, more energetic, etc. Find a purpose in life. I believe that the spiritual realm is about reconnecting with what our purpose in life is. I believe that all of us were born for a specific purpose. There's a lot of awareness out there that says that the Spirit chooses the life that it comes into. I think that there's a lot of truth in that. I think that if we really listen to ourselves enough, that we can honestly get in touch with what we were born to be. So I want you to pay attention to what your thoughts were as a child. I believe as a child is the most spiritual that we are because we're innocent. We haven't been corrupted. We haven't been conditioned. We haven't been structured in a way that we can allow this freedom of expression to be. That's why children are so wonderful to be around with, because they remind us of how wonderful we really are spiritually. I got to confess something to you. So, you know, when we were little growing up in South America, my parents would take us to Disney World every year. So we would go to Disney World in Orlando, and I thought that was just the best thing in the world. So when they told us when I was 13 that we were moving to the United States, all I could think about is, wow, that's the world of Disney World every day. To this day, I still go to Disney World twice a year, minimum, just to remind myself two things. I walk out of Disney World reconnected with the child inside of me, which we tend to forget. And another thing is I walk out of Disney World saying to myself, I'm not thinking big enough. Because just the idea that Walt Disney has to create something that was taken by others and keep expanding and expanding is, to me, very inspiring. And I walk in out of that theme park just saying to myself, I need to start thinking bigger. I need to start doing bigger things, impacting more people in the world. How do you find your purpose? Well, you got to find out those qualities that are very, that other people tell you. Ask your friends, you know, tell me one thing that I'm really good at. What is it that when you think of me, you always say, man, you're the best in the world at this. Maybe that's a skill set. Maybe that's something that is naturally inherited. I also want you to think about the things that you do in which you lose a sense of time while you're doing it. That's one of the reasons why I know where I'm living in my purpose. Do you know that when you're not living on your purpose, that you attract things into your life that are very disrupting, very chaotic? But when you're on purpose, everything seems to work with the harmony of the universe. So find those things in which you're losing sense of time. Because when you're losing sense of time, it's something inside of you telling, man, you were born for this. You are perfect for this. And this is the right time and the right thing at the right place. So that's something I want you to consider. Those are things that will help you. Ignite your creative spark. I want you to consider doing some art classes. Take some dance lessons. Pick up an instrument. Anything that allows your creativity of art to come out is very healing, like I shared with you earlier. Forgiving. I want you to forgive as much as you can. We can never forgive enough. Anytime that somebody does something wrong for you, don't hold it against them. Anytime that you feel that, oh, I want to hold on to it, I will never be able to forgive you. What you did to me, I will take to my grave. Well, guess what? You're going to take it a lot sooner if you keep that attitude. Because it does not work. You're forgiving them, not for their sake, but for your sake. So I want you to do that. Look for the blessings in your life. You know, I find in life that blessings are all around us. But why is it that we're still focusing on the things that are not the blessings? I know that challenges in my life are only there so I can really understand the blessings behind them. There is no challenge that I've endured in my life, and there's been quite a few, in which I haven't walked out of that challenge saying, boy, there's a blessing here. So I'm going to share a story with you about a blessing of an individual that I got to know very well. And this individual was in her 20s, and she was a runner. Beautiful, beautiful lady. Corporate America, Fortune 500 company. One morning she was running, and she lived by herself. She was taking a shower, and a man entered the house and raped her. The man fled. She came into my office because she didn't know where else to go. And I remember telling her, I have no idea what you're going through. I can't even imagine what you're going through. But I know that one day you're going to come out of this, and there's going to be a blessing in disguise. Something that you're going to come out of this, and you're going to say, wow, because that happened, I'm in this place. How many of you have been through something like that in your lives? I know I have many times. So her journey went like this. She thought she was never going to get over this. And I suggested that she start going through some group sessions. Because when you're in a group session, the benefit of that, in my opinion, is that you get to hear that you're not the only person going through a difficult time. So that's a little bit supporting. And that's why they call them support groups. So that's the first thing she did. Well, she became so good at that, she began to be asked to actually lecture about how she's getting over this to bigger platforms. She shared with me later on that she always had a hard time finding the right person to date because she was very beautiful and very successful at the same time financially. And most guys were very intimidated with her, or they wanted her for her beauty, or they wanted her for her money. She came to me probably after 2 years that since that experience, and I was having dinner at a restaurant, and she said, "Remember when you told me that? I want you to introduce you to my husband. And by the way, I'm pregnant." She says she never had a relationship in her life where she felt a man loved her for who she was and not for what she had. That was the blessing that came out of that rape. Can you imagine that? That it takes a rape to recognize that there's somebody out there that is perfect, that will love you just for who you are and not for anything else that you feel you have to offer them. I got to be a certain size to be likable. There will never be a guy that will love me or want to make love to me. There will never be a girl that will think I'm handsome enough. That's all in your head. There's always somebody out there specifically designed to love you and accept you for who you are. But it begins with you beginning that process. Until you do that, you can never attract that person into your life. So I want you to do more forgiving. She forgave that raper. That was a big breakthrough for her. Until she did that, she couldn't get on for her life. Look for the blessings. Hug more often. I'm a hugger. Colombian, Italian, a lot of hugs in my house. I get an average of about 90 hugs a day for the last 20-something years. I love to hug. And the reason why a hug is so important is because a hug is a way of acknowledging somebody. It's a way of allowing you to be in the space of somebody else, and you will never be the same after you hug somebody. There's always a connection there that will be bigger, and the more you hug, the better. I believe that hugs are very healing. In the book, I go through all the healing mechanisms of a hug. And the way that the hugs was, when I went to college, my mom put a little note in my briefcase that said the power of a hug. And it showed all the benefits of a hug. So I was going through school hugging everybody. So one of my best friends was a basketball player, professional basketball player from Canada. And he was in my class as a freshman in graduate school. And first day of school, tall guy, you know, 6'4", big muscle guy. I just gave him a hug to welcome him. I said, "Hey, man, I'm Fab," you know, gave him a hug. And 3 years later, after we're very good friends right now, he says, "Can I tell you something?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "You know, when you gave me that hug, every cell in my body wanted to hit you. I just wanted to hit you so bad. And then I held myself back because I knew it was pure. I knew that it was intended in a good way. But what I did, Fab, that was in September. That Christmas, I went back to Canada. And after Christmas dinner, I asked my dad to go outside on the porch. And I said, "Dad, would it be okay for me to give you a hug?" And he hugged his father. He said his father never hugged him growing up, because his father was taught that hugging was for women. His dad broke down, and he broke down when they hugged, and they wouldn't let go of each other. Now he's a bigger hugger than me. The power of a hug is so powerful, you don't underestimate it. It's so powerful, and if we did more of that, this will be a much, much better world. And develop a supportive, loving relationship. A relationship is a two-way street, in my opinion. A relationship is there to actually be as nurturing to you as you need to be nurturing to them. Whenever you're one-sided in a relationship, typically that relationship is not sustainable long-term. When you begin to think of the person that you're with and begin to think of the things that you can do to make all their dreams come true, that person automatically will have the same tendency to do that for you. Can you relate to that? So let me tell you what I did with my wife. So we've been together for 24 years. So she was graduating from school. And for graduation night, I took her to this nice restaurant that I couldn't afford. But I wanted to do it. So during that nice restaurant, it was in Dallas. And it was called Reunion Arena. And it's in the Hyatt Hotel where the ball rotates and it goes around. Well, during that dinner, I was asking her, we were just dating. I was said, tell me all the dreams that you have in life. And I borrowed some paper on a paper napkin, which is for the drinks, and I started writing all the things that she would tell me. And there was about 20-something things that she said to me. 10 years later, I crossed the last thing, and I took her out to dinner again, not the same restaurant. And I said, do you remember when we went out to dinner? Remember when I asked you this question? She had no idea I had kept that piece of paper, and my whole intention was make all her dreams come true. And what happened was 10 years later, she had achieved everything she ever wanted or thought was possible in her life. Because she was comparing it to her mother and what her mother had. And she said, boy, if I can have a new house, if I can have a new car, if I can have a child, if I can have, I mean, all these things. So we crossed that out. And 10 years later, I said to her, isn't it time now that we think bigger than what we are thinking? Every year we sit down during the holidays and we talk about the life we want to create for that next year. We evaluate what happened this year and we talk about the next year. I want you guys to do that for yourselves. You're creating your own future, but you have to be very strategic about it. You have to be purposely about it. And once you do that, you realize that anything you want in life is attainable. You see other people get it. There's no difference between them and you except they believe it's possible. Can you relate? They believe it's possible. And they're doing something about it. So you got to begin the healing process today. And I hope that after this session, one of the things that you want to do more than anything is to really do the action steps. Take whatever you heard today, whatever action steps you thought of, please write them down. If you didn't write them down as I was speaking, do it after. Make sure that in the action step is where you're going to take this. Because when you do that, all of a sudden now you have an opportunity to be able to make the changes because you're choosing something different. And ultimately, change is a choice. And no one can ever force that choice on you until you're ready. You know, we come here primarily because we are so excited to share with you what's working in our lives and the people that we work with. But the one thing that I can tell you all of us have in common is that we want you to walk out of here with a plan of action of saying, I'm going to do it this time because I know I can make it happen, because I'm ready for that change, because I love myself more now than I did before, and I know I'm worth it. Say, I'm worth it. Say, I'm worth it. Because when you do that, all of a sudden, everything opens up to you, and you realize that that's something fantastic. I want to invite you to come visit my website, and I have an interview there that will give you some of the steps of my last book that I did, and it's on Hay House. You can get it. And it's 4 steps to living a fabulous life. And I did this interview, and the reason I put it there is because it goes through the action steps of what you can do to live this fabulous life that we've been talking about. What are the action steps that you can take? And of course, follow me if you want to. I love to keep that conversation going. So I'm going to wrap up with a story that I hopefully will inspire you to recognize that you have the power to change. When I was in practice, full time, I attracted this patient named Rosie. And Rosie was 350 pounds. She had called my office very distraught. My office manager, Georgia, said, we have a new patient coming in. She sounds really bad. So instead of waiting, Rosie walked into my office and she could hardly fit through the glass door. So she had to go in side by side, and this small gentleman was propping her with her shoulders, helping her to get through the door. We put her in one of our exam rooms, and as I evaluated Rosie, Rosie said to me that she had been diagnosed with all these conditions, fibromyalgia, reflex sympathetic syndrome, depression, all kinds of things, that she was taking over 30 pills a day to make it through the day. She had gained all this weight only in the last 4 years because the medicine kept getting more and more potent. And of course, one of the side effects in medicine is lowering your metabolism, which allows you to increase weight. She was sleeping an average of 3 hours a day. She was not doing good. So I told Rosie what I told all my patients. I said, you know, Rosie, I'm going to evaluate you. I'm going to find out if you have interferences in that body. And then if I find that, I'm going to adjust you. And I'm going to give you some mental things and spiritual things that would allow you to get through this. Are you ready? She said, yes. So I accepted her as a patient. She began that journey. She was in a lot of pain the first few weeks. After 6 months, she was 50% pain-free. After a year, she was almost 100% pain-free. So then her husband got transferred, and then I didn't see Rosie anymore. I found her a chiropractor somewhere else. 7 years later, Rosie calls me. I became president of Parker University 13 years ago. And Rosie calls me to congratulate me on this great honor. And she said, Dr. Mancini, I'm doing so great. I've been putting into practice everything you said. I'm down to 154 pounds now. I have a job that I love. But Dr. Mancini, what I didn't tell you is that my husband had told me 3 days before I saw you he was going to leave me because I wasn't the spouse that he married, that he wanted after all those years of suffering. Dr. Mancini, what I didn't tell you is that my children hated me because I wasn't the mother I needed to be. I wasn't able to hug them. I wasn't able to help them with their homework. I was never in their school, place, and in their sports. My life has changed completely. But then she went on to say something that really, really, really impacted me. She said, but Dr. Mancini, what I didn't tell you is that 2 days before I went to see you, I had bought a gun. And I had already decided that if I didn't feel any hope after visiting with you, after going through all these specialists, I would kill myself. I am calling you today to say thank you for saving my life. I want you to know that there's a lot of roses out there. And in some way or another, all of us have roses inside of us that feel desperate, out of hope, that feel that there's nothing out there that can help us. I want you to know that you're not alone in this journey. The Hay House family is here to support you through this journey. It's been an honor to be with you. God bless you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. And I look forward to hugging you and meeting you right after this when I do the book signing. Thank you.